And now, fighting out of the red corner, CagePotato.com!
Bruce Buffer, everybody! Let's hear it for him!
And I'm not going to touch that one with a 25-foot pole, Moro.
I'd like to touch it with a 25-centimeter one, but instead we'll just call the fight as now with the on.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
Yo, this your boy Kimbo Slice. Check this out. When you ain't got shit to do and you're in front of your computer, I want you to read CagePotato.com. CagePotato.com. Because tapping out is for bitches.
My name is Carl the Heat Breeze, and listen to Bum Rush Radio.
I'm Steve Velasquez, and Cage Potato is the best.
This is Jorge Rivera, and you're listening to the Bum Rush Radio Show.
Hello, Potato Nation, and welcome in once again to another episode of the Bum Rush Podcast. If you think things sound a little different today, well, you're right. Managing editor Ben Goldstein is on assignment, which frankly could mean anything. So for the duration of this episode, you're stuck with me, Cage Potato staff writer Chad Dundas, and my brother-in-arms from north of the border, senior editor Mike Russell. Mike, how you doing today?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. It's still colder than hell in Montana, and my girlfriend has strep throat. But other than that, we're keeping on.
Yeah, it's pretty cold here, too. And I'm glad to be back, though. I had that week off, and I tell you, man, I never worked as hard in my life renovating this house.
Yeah, it's always it always sounds so easy, right?
Yeah. I figured 9 days we'd have it done from top to bottom. And it's like, yeah, we're still kind of unpacking boxes and getting stuff ready. But I used to work as a tradesman doing electrical work and plumbing work at one point, and I'm real glad I don't do it anymore because it's a real pain in the ass.
Yeah, I'm sure that sitting around recording a podcast is a little bit easier than that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, later in the show, Strikeforce women's welterweight champion Marluce Coonan will join us to talk about her upcoming title defense against replacement fighter Liz Carmouche. First, though, we have a lot of news and random notes to get to, so let's kick that off. UFC 127 is in the books from Australia, and a lot of Dana White and Joe Silver's future plans seem to go up in smoke as the main event featuring John Fitch and BJ Penn ended in the always entertaining majority draw. And Dennis Siver kind of made lightweight up-and-comer George Soteropoulos look like he hadn't really trained the takedown. Michael Bisping appeared to cheat his ass off during the co-main event with Jorge Rivera and then appeared to spit somewhere in the general direction of Rivera's corner men. So, yeah, we have a lot to talk about. Let's start out with the basics. Mike, here's a question that doesn't have a right or wrong answer. How did you score Fitch and Penn? And please explain your answer.
It's funny because I thought Penn won. I haven't watched it again, but everything I've been reading says that after everybody watched it a second time, it might be a lot closer. But I just don't think that that last round was dominant enough to score a 10-8 like some people are saying. And I don't think that Fitch did enough the second round to take that round. It was definitely BJ first round. I'm going to say BJ second round. And I think Fitch definitely took the third round. But I don't know. It could have gone either way. Like, I think it could have gone to Fitch the second round. But a draw is, I don't know. I don't know if that's the way it should have been scored.
Yeah, as I was live blogging it, I didn't know if Fitch deserved to win, but I thought that he was going to just because I thought the takedown down the stretch in the second round was probably going to sway the judges in his favor. I thought it was interesting that after the fight, Fitch came out and said he thought that the first round was a draw, which is sort of, I guess, he sees things the way he wants to see them. But I at the end of the day, though, I guess I didn't really have a problem with the fight being scored a draw just because I think that you can make a case for either guy. Yeah. Obviously, that's not the way you want to see things end, and it doesn't feel very satisfying to have him end that way. But I mean, I guess the real problem is that allegedly this fight was supposed to establish a number one contender for the welterweight title. And, you know, those sort of epically failed because there were no winner. So I guess the question now, Mike, I'll kick this over to you. There's so much uncertainty involving the 170-pound belt. What's the best way, do you think, for the UFC to clear up this mess moving forward?
Well, you know what? I think even if Fitch won, I can't see them giving him the title shot. It's just Dana has something against him, and I think it goes back to, remember when he was fired a couple of years ago over the whole Jax Pacific, or no, it was the video game where he wouldn't sign over his rights to the video game. And, you know, I think he's just kind of had a beef against him ever since then, because he's just been, you know, coming out and talking against him and saying, you know, that he doesn't do enough. But then again, how do you sell a fight with Fitch and GSP when we've seen how the first fight went, and we've seen, you know, Fitch isn't a guy that's going to finish fights anytime soon, I don't think. He's been on such a streak of just doing enough just to eke by and win rounds. To me, if it was up to me, and just as, from a fan perspective, I'd like to see, we've talked about it before, to have like an ultimate fighter where it's just 170-pounders in the house deciding who the number one contender is. But I mean, there's no way they're going to do it, because that is just most of their cards then for that whole 6-week period or for beyond, depending on if anybody gets injured, are going to be screwed. But you know what? I'd watch that season. I haven't watched a season of The Ultimate Fighter probably for 2 or 3 seasons now. But to me, they need to do something to shake it up, because there's so many guys that are kind of on the cusp of being top 5. You know, you got guys like Carlos Condit. You got guys like Martin Kampman. I don't know if they're going to, if Diego Sanchez wins against Martin, I have a feeling they're going to try to sneak him into a title shot somewhere down the road, but I don't know. We'll wait and see. He's the one guy that hasn't fought GSP yet, but we saw what BJ Penn did to him. So I don't think it's going to end, you know, in his favor, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I was going to ask you about that, just because now that Fitch and Penn have come out in a draw, and Penn sort of indicates that he wants to fight Fitch again, regardless of whether or not they're actually going to make that fight. Would you be okay with the idea of either Martin Kampman or Diego Sanchez kind of vaulting into that position, just because, you know, Kampman lost a split decision to Shields, so I could see definitely making a case that he could fight the winner of Shields and St. Pierre again. But as you brought up, Diego Sanchez may be a little bit more shaky, just because he's got those back-to-back losses to BJ Penn and John Hathaway just a couple of years ago, and seems to be a fighter still sort of kind of trying to right the ship after that, you know, the adversity of having to leave Greg Jackson's camp and move out to California, and to hear him tell it, kind of try to train himself while he was out there. So Kampman, I could definitely see making the case for, even though maybe he's not quite as promotable or quite as well known maybe as Diego Sanchez, just because of his win in The Ultimate Fighter. But how would you feel about either one of those two guys kind of stepping in?
Well, Kampman, if you recall, I think it was back in about 2009, he was offered a title shot and told that, I think it was, he's supposed to fight Swick back in the day, and they said the winner was supposed to get a title shot. So I think, you know, he's been another one of those guys that's kind of been shafted, and then he went and lost to Paul Daly, which kind of threw a wrench in the plans for him. I think that, you know, definitely if Diego can pull out a win against Kampman, he should be in contention, because that, let's face it, that fight with Jake Shields was very close. And if Martin had just done something at, you know, in the third round just to pull out that round, I think he would have won it. So I don't know. I don't think Jake Shields is going to beat GSP. And, you know, there's talk about GSP moving up. So I would be more apt to throw some of these other guys in the mix that have already fought GSP if the title opens up, you know, because I don't know. Do you think anybody in this division right now is capable of beating GSP the way that he's been fighting, or the way that he's been even training lately?
I mean, you never want to say never in MMA, but it certainly appears that way.
Yeah.
And we've talked on the podcast before about how I feel a little bit torn about GSP moving up to middleweight, just because obviously you'd love to see him fight Anderson Silva in that super fight, but also you kind of hate to see him leave the welterweight division, just because it is interesting to watch his dominance and to see how far he could possibly push that, to see, you know, how many straight wins he could put together, or just if he could entirely clean out the division. And I do think having guys like Diego Sanchez be relevant again, at least in the welterweight division, would be good for the weight class, just because he, as you mentioned before, he is one of the guys that we haven't seen fight GSP. So I guess to answer your question, I think GSP is going to be the favorite in any welterweight fight that he has. But if he comes out and kind of rolls through Jake Shields the way he rolled through Josh Koscheck in his last fight, then I think it's tough to sell anybody on the idea of beating him at 170 pounds.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's funny too, because like you say, anything can happen, and we should never say never. And we saw, you know, what happened with Matt Serra. I think GSP, to me, if I look at all of his fights since that fight, he tries his damnedest to make sure he doesn't get hit. And it's funny, I got a copy of the Rush Fit DVDs, and I just happened to be browsing through them today. And one of the very first things that he says in part of the warm-up, or sorry, one of the previews, is that, you know, he was talking about footwork and talking about, you know, you have to stay on your toes, even for this workout. And he actually said, you got to try not to get hit. You never want to get hit. Like, he was focusing on it. Now, it just made me laugh to myself, because it just seems like that's what he's been doing. He doesn't want to wade in like he used to wade in a little bit. You know, he's been so cautious lately that, I don't know. I think if he's fighting as cautiously as he is, he has been, that nobody's going to touch him. But you know what? And like you said, anything can happen. A guy like Campman, you know, if he were to catch him, or a guy, you know, even a guy like Jake Ellenberger, not a lot of people are fans of, if he were to connect with him the way he did with Pele back in the day, like I think about two or 3 years ago, I think GSP would be in a world of trouble, because look what BJ did the first time they fought. He boxed him up the whole fight, and George didn't know what to do. He was being jabbed into Bolivian, as some people say. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. In the event that GSP defeats Shields and does move up to 185 pounds to try to fight Anderson Silva, what then do you do with the welterweight title? Does it make any sense to have BJ Penn and John Fitch rematch and just have that fight be for the welterweight title, or would you like to see some other scenario?
Well, that'd be, I think, a cheap way for them to win the belt. When you figure that's what they were trying to set up anyway. It would almost seem like Strikeforce, the way that they're trying to throw guys in and out of the tournament to try to set up the matches that they want. I'd like to see some kind of even if they didn't do a tournament, some kind of, you know, these guys have to win against these guys to face this guy. There has to be some kind of, I guess, reward for winning, because, you know, like I said, there's a lot of guys like Condit still in the mix, Campman, you know, even Hardy, if Hardy could get back, Koscheck, a lot of guys that are kind of on the cusp of, you know, two or three fights away from getting, you know, maybe back into title contention. But I thought BJ kind of stepped in there out of the blue, because he hadn't fought in so many years at 170. You know, he had that one fight against Matt Hughes, who, let's face it, isn't the same Matt Hughes we've seen, you know, even the past couple of years. He's kind of been on a downslide. So for me to see BJ get a title shot, and Fitch, you know, everybody argues, well, Fitch has beaten everybody that he's faced except for GSP. Well, he's done so, but just barely, by the skin of his teeth in some of the fights. You know, he's laid on top of guys. He hasn't won a fight, you know, so even Thiago Alves, I'd like to see him get a few more fights and maybe get back into contention. But to me, the best way to do it would be to set up some type of competition where that was the prize, be it a tournament, be it a season of the Ultimate Fighter, which I don't see happening, but, you know, the fanboy in me wants to see it.
Right. It would be cool if they could pull it off.
Oh, yeah.
Let's move on to the middleweight division a little bit here. At least to me, it seemed like Michael Bisping fumbled a major public relations opportunity last weekend, because it seemed like all he really had to do was show up, beat Jorge Rivera, and act like even a halfway decent guy while doing it. Instead, he grabbed the fence to avoid getting swept. He blasted Rivera with a clearly illegal knee, and then he spit, you know, at or near Rivera corner man Matt Finney. Mike, what's your take on all this? Were Bisping's actions somehow justified because of all the trash Rivera's camp talked before the fight? Or was Bisping just way out of line?
Well, man, you know what? An illegal knee, nothing justifies an illegal knee or an illegal act like that. And to me, spitting is just such a vile, you know, disgusting display. And to me, it's so, I don't know, it's one of the worst things you could do. It's like worse than a slap in the face. And for him to say that, you know, oh, I was just spitting on the ground or whatever, it was blatant. I think he was totally trying to spit on him, but I think that it was blatant. Dana White thinks it was blatant, and I think that, you know, Bisping, like you said, isn't doing himself any favors with his actions, because not a lot of people like the guy. After that outburst he had a few years ago, yelling at a reporter who said that he didn't beat Hamill, and he told him he was, you know, a fat whatever, piece of shit or whatever it was, and you know what? He's not. I don't think that Dana's too happy with him now, and I think that, you know, his punishment, I don't know if they're going to suspend him. If they fine him, where's the money going to go? You know, unless it's to charity, I don't know. But to me, he's
straight back to the UFC.
Yeah. Dana's going to go grab everybody lunch at the office. But I don't know. To me, I it was despicable, and I didn't like seeing it. And you know, if there's any punishment, I think he should get whatever punishment's going to be handed down to him.
Well, yeah, like I wrote on the site, I do think it's a little bit weird to come out and say you're going to, you know, punish him for spitting after the fight, which I totally understand, because obviously you don't want to encourage that. You want to discourage that kind of behavior. It's behavior unbecoming of a sportsman or whatever. But it seems weird to punish him for that. But at the same time, he seemed to sort of cheat his ass off during the fight and essentially got away with it, just because when you win by a stoppage, you then, you know, it makes the point that you lose for kneeing Rivera in the head totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
At this point, do you think that Bisping is the least likable guy on the UFC roster?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know what? He's got to be close. Everybody said Chael Sonnen before was probably one of the most hated guys in the sport. And then, you know, now he's talking about fighting Bisping. And I wrote on the site, you know, it's going to be weird seeing him be the good guy in one of his fights, because everybody's going to be rooting against Bisping. But the interesting thing I think about the fight, too, is that the referee of the bout said that if Jorge couldn't continue, he would have won by disqualification, which,
right,
you know, a lot of people were confused, thinking, no, it would have been a no contest. It would have been, you know, whatever. But, yeah, he would have actually won it. So, I don't know. I think that if I had to choose somebody on the roster right now, he's probably the one. Koscheck, you know, is pretty close, but I don't think Koscheck, you know, is as blatant of an asshole. You know, he does it. I think it's part of his act. I think Bisping is truly a dick.
Yeah, he just can't help himself.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's just a cocky Brit, you know. And that's pretty much every article I write about him, I call him the cocky Brit, because, you know, I guess calling him an asshole wouldn't be as professional, or a dick or a prick, whatever. But he just seems, you know, I've never interviewed him before. I think I was going to once and something fell through. But, you know, Koscheck is full of himself, and I think 90% of it is him trying to get a rise and trying to sell the fight. I think Bisping just, you know, is just a dick.
Well, let's talk just a little bit about the lightweight bout. Dennis Seaver beats George Sotiropoulos, which kind of it thrusts the 155-pound division even further into chaos, which, as you know, I'm all about. Was this just a case of Sotiropoulos kind of underestimating Dennis Seaver, or was something else going on, Mike? What do you think?
Man, I don't know. I'm a Sotiropoulos fan. You know, I'm a 10th Planet guy, and it just watching that fight, it just seemed like you said, he couldn't figure out how to get the fight to the ground, and he didn't know what to do standing, you know, which is funny because he's got, like, some boxing experience. I think he's an undefeated amateur boxer. So, I don't know. To me, it just, like you said, it's throwing everything into chaos, because Seaver wasn't a guy I was considering as even a contender before. And they were saying George was maybe two or three fights away from getting a title shot. So, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about the bout other than it was surprising to me that it ended the way it ended.
Yeah, it appeared to me that maybe the Sotiropoulos camp, you know, I don't want to speculate about the guy's camp, but it just seemed during the fight that maybe they had considered that in a foregone conclusion that he would get Seaver to the ground.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, once we get him to the ground, then you can work your jiu-jitsu. But maybe they didn't, you know, dot all the I's and cross all the T's there with trying to train the actual takedowns a lot. Maybe they just thought, since Seaver is pretty much known as a kickboxer, that Sotiropoulos would have no trouble taking him down. And once it turned out that wasn't the case, it kind of it turned into kind of a rough fight for Sotiropoulos.
Yeah. I just think, you know, it's funny too, because a little tidbit, when I was interviewing George for the podcast probably a couple months ago, I guess it was back in December, he told me that while he was in Australia, he trained with John Fitch for a while because they were both there doing promo. And I'm like, oh, so you worked on your wrestling? He said, no, we worked stand-up. Now, you know, the foreshadowing of what happened, maybe he should have been working his wrestling a little bit, because he might have been able to get that takedown. I don't know. It just he almost seemed, I don't know if something was wrong, if he was out of sorts or what the problem was, but he just didn't seem, you know, he's taken down guys with a lot better wrestling pedigree than that before, you know, Kurt Pellegrino and guys like that, you know, obviously have more grappling experience than Seaver, but I don't know. It's interesting now. The question is, what do they do with Sotiropoulos, and what do they do with Seaver? You know, do you give him a top three, a top four guy?
Yeah, it's interesting just because we saw Melvin Gallard beat Evan Dunham a month or two ago. And like Seaver, Gallard is a guy that you probably wouldn't consider a contender. And then he comes out and beats a guy that you would consider a major contender for the lightweight title. So, you know, I was thinking maybe you have Seaver fight Melvin Gallard and then
or Dunham. Have him fight Dunham.
The winner of that fight, you know, then kind of looks like a more credible contender.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's if Anthony Pettis loses to Clay Guida in June, I think they're going to fight then I don't know what you do with the winner of Frankie Edgar's third fight with Graham Maynard.
Yeah.
But I guess we've still got, you know, some ground to cover here. Are there any other headlines you wanted to talk about before we move on from UFC 127? Maybe Brian Ebersole's upset at Chris Lytle, or Nick Ring's controversial decision over Ricky Fukuda, or, you know, Mark Hunt kind of surprisingly coming out and getting his first win in the UFC. Does any of that interest you at all?
Yeah, you know what? We talked about Teixeira before, and I think Teixeira was just maybe being kept around because of his ties with Brock. And I think, you know, Hunt beating him as easily as he did, and with you know, the walk-off KO everybody's talking about, because he did it, you know, through the uppercut, knocked him out, and then just walked away. You know, it was a classic, almost Pride-style knockout. But I don't know. To me, that was probably one of the more interesting stories. Ebersole was pretty impressive, you got to admit.
He was impressive. And, you know, on, I think it was as late as Friday, I started to hear that Lytle had this surgery like 3 weeks ago, had like fairly major knee surgery, tore his meniscus, I think it turned out to be. And that was after I had written the gambling addiction enabler. But at that point, I started to think, oh, man, you know, at plus 205, maybe Ebersole starts to look a little bit more interesting if you believe that Lytle has had this knee surgery. I'm not sure, though, how much the knee – obviously, after he loses, he comes out and talks about the knee surgery. But I'm not sure how much that really affected the fight, because prior to, you know, the down the stretch in the second round when Ebersole blasted him right in the face with that kind of huge knee in the middle of a scramble situation, it kind of looked like Lytle was going to have his way in that fight. It kind of looked like he could do whatever he wanted. He was just basically, it looked like he almost wasn't even taking the fight seriously, just winging like major power shots to the body and trying to knock Ebersole out, and then just couldn't get it back together after he kind of got blasted in the face with that knee. So I don't know, you know, where do you think Chris Lytle goes from here? Obviously, it looked like he kind of had an outside chance of building it into a title contender at 170 because he had a nice win streak going. But at this point, is he, like, he's talking about contemplating retirement. Do you think that's the right move? Where do you see him going here?
I don't know. When we had him on the show a few months ago, he was talking about, you know, wanting to make a run for the title. He was like going to go all in with everything. But, you know, you talk about the knee injury and about what effect it had. I had a similar, like a meniscus surgery a few years ago. And I know a lot of people that are fighters that have had that surgery. And they say the hardest part to get back into the swing of things is that your cardio is down, because you're not allowed to do cardio. Well, you can, but, you know, an aerodyne bike is a lot different than running on a treadmill or running, you know, doing laps or whatever. The other thing is strength. So, you know, that might have had some effect. And Chris, he doesn't strike me as a guy that makes a lot of excuses. So, you know, to hear him say something like that he had the surgery and everything else, and then talk about retirement, you wonder how he could be taking it pretty seriously. So I wouldn't like, you know, I'd like to see him fight. There's a few fights that I'd like to see him come out and, you know, take on some of these guys. You know, they're trying to decide where everybody is in the 170-pound class. And there's some fights that I'd like to see him take before he retires.
Were you able to watch the Nick Ring fight on ION?
No, you know what? I didn't, because I had, my satellite dish was down because I was moving that day, and I didn't get to see it. But I heard, you know, I heard it was pretty bad, that Fukuda won pretty handily. But I don't know. I've heard different stories, how some people said some of the rounds could have been scored either way because Fukuda didn't do enough to take the round away from Nate Ring. But I don't know. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I was really kind of surprised by the general public's reaction to the fight, because I was, you know, I discovered real late in the day on Saturday that I actually do get ION on my ridiculously inclusive satellite package. So I thought, okay, well, I'll go ahead and live blog the three fights that are going to be on ION then, because I'm going to be watching them anyway. So I was kind of sitting there by myself at my house live blogging this fight, and I was watching the first round, and I thought it was pretty clear that Nick Ring was winning the first round fairly decisively. I thought it was a close round, but Fukuda didn't do anything with his takedowns, and he had two takedowns in that first round, one in the last 10 seconds and one about the middle of the round, when as soon as the fight hit the mat, Ring was threatening him with an armbar triangle attempt, and so Fukuda basically was not in control of that exchange, you could argue. So I was kind of live blogging along, thinking like, all right, well, this is 10-9 for Ring. And then all of a sudden, Joe Rogan says on the broadcast, well, you got to believe Nick Ring is down on the scorecards here. And I was just like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
That's how he sways the public, listen to Joe a lot of times.
The second and third rounds were closer. I personally thought Ring won the second, and then Fukuda, you know, obviously won the third.
Yeah.
But so I had it scored 29-28 for Ring, and I thought it was totally bizarre the way the UFC broadcast team was just kind of riding this thesis of it being a screw job decision, or that, and then, you know, Joe Rogan's even saying things like at the end of the fight, oh, Nick Ring needs to come out here throwing crazy head kicks and just doing whatever he can to to win this fight. And I'm sitting at home thinking, man, if I'm Nick Rand, I think I won. Yeah. I just want to get to the bell to win my decision.
Yeah. Well, so then even Dana, tweeted that it was a robbery and that they need to get better judges and everything else. And that's, I think most people probably read that. They hear Joe's commentary and they just, it's like they sway the opinion of it.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised because I had to write some stuff after the event for Versus, and so I didn't really get to look at the internet too much until the next day. But I woke up Sunday morning and was just looking around the internet, and MMA Junkie in their headline called it a robbery, which is not like them. Usually they're fairly sober and middle of the road in their coverage, and I saw a couple of different sites that just talked about how Nick Ring got away with one and all this stuff, and so maybe I was just totally wrong, but I when I watched it, I thought Nick Ring won, and would have been surprised if he had lost the decision. But again, that's just me. Should we talk a little bit about Strikeforce?
Yeah, sure. It sounds like a good segue into what we've got going on this weekend.
Yeah, Strikeforce comes at us with another show, and one that it's kind of billing as significant due to having these two title bouts on the card. But in my opinion, there hasn't been a tremendous amount of buildup for this show. Mike, are you looking forward to this show, or does it seem like more of a stopgap for Strikeforce between now and April and then eventually June?
Yeah, I think we're kind of caught in the shadow of the last event, at the Heavyweight Grand Prix, and I don't know. To me, they haven't promoted this one as much as some of the other events, and I'm interested to see who's going to win some of the fights, but it's almost flying under the radar. A lot of people forget that there's a Strikeforce show this weekend.
Yeah, this will be Dan Henderson's third appearance in Strikeforce, and kind of despite being 6-4 in his last 10 fights dating back to 2006, and he's actually 0-3 in title fights since 2007, major promotions just sort of keep insisting on giving Henderson the chance to win their championships. Last I checked, Henderson's actually the betting favorite over Rafael Feijão Cavalcante. Mike, if Henderson manages to beat Feijão on Saturday, are you buying or selling him as one of the top light heavyweights in the world?
Man, if he wins that fight, I'd say probably buying him, because Feijão to me is one of those guys that's hasn't been tested by a lot of guys, but what he did to King Mo, who's a lot of people are torn about to see if he's a real good 205er compared to some other guys, but we saw how he controlled Musasi in their fight, and I don't know, MMA math is starting to get a little bit muddled now with all the guys that are winning and losing. But to me, I was kind of surprised that they gave him the title shot already, like you said. Yeah, Henderson coming in and getting a title shot with Strikeforce. His first fight was a title shot, and then he comes in and he beats Babalu, and then he's got a title shot in his next fight. And I know Babalu used to have the title, but Babalu's another guy. He's one of my favorite fighters of all time, but he's kind of a shell of his former self. So to beat him, to me, doesn't equal title shot. But I think that's why they brought they brought Hendo into the mix, was because they knew that he was a marquee guy that could sell pay-per-view. So, eventually, once they get on pay-per-view, I guess it'll be where he earns the money. But to me, he's if he wins, I'd say definitely probably at least maybe top five. I'd have to bump him up to my top five.
Yeah, it did seem a little strange with them boosting him into this title shot immediately. You have to figure that Strikeforce at least probably considers Dan Henderson one of its more marketable or one of its better known guys. Yep. And you have to think that maybe it's a sort of an NFL quarterback type situation, where because Strikeforce has this investment in Henderson and they've paid him all this money and apparently also guaranteed that all of their fighters will wear his clothing line when they come down to the ring to fight, maybe they feel like they need to sort of make good on their own investment by putting him in these high profile situations. More to the point, Mike, do you think that he will beat Feijão?
Will, I think that if it doesn't turn into a slugfest, he will. But you know what? When's the last time that we saw Hendo get knocked out? I'm trying to think in my head. I don't remember the last time that I actually saw him.
Yeah, he got kind of knocked out by Anderson Silva, who eventually finished him by a choke. But
yeah, I guess it was kind of a flash knockout, but he's never actually been finished by knockout, I don't think, at all. No, he hasn't. He's been finished by submission and decision, so it'll be interesting to see if Feijão can connect early. But you know what? We've never really seen Feijão into the later rounds, how well he can do against a guy like Henderson, especially in a five-round fight. I'm going to give it to Hendo just because I like the underdog. And to me, he technically, I know he's not the underdog on in the betting odds, but in this fight, I just think age-wise and power-wise, I'm going to say he's the underdog because, let's face it, he's 40 years old. Feijão's what, 30 years old? I think he's about Is he 30? No, he's, yeah, he's about 30. So sure. 10 years difference, a little bit of speed, a little bit of power. I think that Feijão actually has the edge in a lot of areas, but I think that it's going to go, I think, you know, technically, I think what Dan is going to do is he's going to try to get the fight to the ground and either pound him out or try to submit him. So I'm going to give him the edge. I'm going to say he's going to win it. But if it goes early, first round, I say Feijão is going to win.
Yeah, this seems like a fight where Henderson can maybe come out and try to use the wrestling skills that he sort of is seems loath to use in a fight. He seems to always like to kind of slug it out and knock a guy out with that big right hand that he has, which I think would be a dangerous game for him to try to play against Feijão. So I kind of agree with you. I think if Henderson fights smart here and maybe kind of tries to grind it out, that he'll be able to craft maybe a decision or a late stoppage. Let me ask you this, though. Do you think this is a must-win situation for Dan Henderson? If he loses this fight, he'll be 1-2 in Strikeforce. He's kind of getting a little long in the tooth for a fighter. Where do you think he goes from here if he can't pull this off? And is this a must-win situation?
Oh, man, you know, it's tricky because he could go back down to middleweight, but he talks about maybe not wanting to cut as much weight because of his age and because of what the toll it's taken on his body. You know, and I've heard rumors too. I don't know if he's one of the guys that they include in the list of guys that are on testosterone replacement therapy. They were saying that another guy from Team Quest, Randy's a guy that people have questioned for a while, but I think I heard that Hendo's also on it because, you know, cutting weight for wrestling and as long as he has is definitely not good for the system. So I don't know. I'd like to see him fight at 205 if possible, if not move down to 185. But, you know, he's not going to fight King Mo. They used to be teammates at Team Quest. You know, who are you going to have him fight if he loses to Cavalcante? You know, there's not a lot of fights. And, you know, but if he moves down to 185, Jason Miller's a guy that he won't fight because they were teammates. You know, there's a lot of guys that, you know, it's tough to know who I'd put him against if he lost this fight.
Yeah, I think it puts him and Strikeforce in kind of a bad position if he loses this because, like we said, they are paying him a lot of money. And if he goes 1-2 in his first three fights in Strikeforce, then that's – I don't know what you do with him at that point, like you said. Yeah. In terms of the women's title match, do you think that this fight took a major hit when Misha Tate had to drop out with the injury? Or is Marluse Kunin's first title defense enough to spark some sort of interest for you in this fight?
For me, I like to see Marluse fight. Like, she's a Golden Glory style of fighting, you know, I think fits well with her. And she's been training since she was 14 with Golden Glory. So, I don't know. To me, it didn't really lose much interest because I wanted to see her next fight and see how she followed up from winning the title. Mm. But I think a lot of people that were looking for the Misha Tate fight, maybe casual fans or people that aren't necessarily fans of women's MMA, but I think this fight might even be a little bit better because I think Carmouche might be a more solid opponent for her, which, you know, maybe her record doesn't show it. Maybe people don't know who she is. But to me, I don't know. I'm going to watch it anyway, and I think, you know, it's going to be probably a decent fight. I still think, you know, Marluse is probably going to be too much for Carmouche.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear you say that about Liz Carmouche. I would have thought, you know, I can't claim to be an expert about the Strikeforce women's welterweight division, but the way Misha Tate kind of rolled through their one-night tournament, I would have thought that she would be a pretty stiff competition, unless maybe you consider that Misha Tate's takedown wrestling-oriented game plays into Kunin's ground game a little bit too much. But yeah, I agree with you that I think it'll be interesting to see Kunin come out and make her first title defense kind of against anybody, but you know, you'd like to see some sort of build up and legitimate matchmaking from Strikeforce in this division, since, you know, the other women's division kind of seems like Chris Cyborg and everybody else. You don't really want the 135 pound class to kind of start feeling like Marluse Kunin and everybody else. So it'll be interesting to see what they do down the road if Misha Tate does eventually get a title shot, or if, you know, Sarah Kaufman is able to work back into the mix. But I'm interested to see what happens nonetheless. In terms of the other two fights on the broadcast portion of the card, are you interested at all? You know, that it seemed like Strikeforce really struggled to find an opponent for Tim Kennedy before settling on Melvin Manhoff, and then you've got, you know, Evangelista versus Masvidal, which seems like, okay, sure, why not throw that on the card? Is this card just those two title fights and then some junk, or how are you looking at these other two fights?
I think, you know, the Kennedy-Manhoff fight I'm interested in seeing because I want to see if Kennedy, he's talked a little bit about how, you know, people have asked him, you know, obviously they've asked him if he wants to take it to the ground because Manhoff's a guy that can, you know, kick your head off, punch your face in. But he's been saying, you know what, no, I'm comfortable wherever the fight's going to go. I don't know if that's reality or if that's just maybe a little bit of bravado on his part, but I wouldn't want to stand in there with Melvin Manhoef for very long because, you know, let's face it, the guy could probably kill you and make it so you could never have children again if you catch it. You know, he's, I don't know, to me, that's probably more interesting than the Evangelista-Masvidal fight. I like Masvidal. Evangelista is a decent fighter, but I don't think it's going to have the excitement level or the, I don't know, the buzz surrounding it because I think that's going to be, I'm going to pick the Kennedy-Manhoef fight for fight of the night.
Yeah, I think that has some potential.
Yeah.
Not to switch gears too fast here, but let's just touch on Bellator real fast. Since while Strikeforce is having their show over on Showtime, Bellator is going to be making its debut on MTV2. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are there. Do you think that this is a significant move for Bellator and maybe MMA in general to be on what is sort of a high-profile cable network like MTV2? Or is it, you know, is this just kind of a weird matching of bedfellows here with Bellator and MTV2?
I don't know. I think it's maybe, you know, they probably looked at the fact that Mayhem Show was as popular and did as well as it could on as it did on MTV, and they probably saw dollar signs. You know, everybody's kind of trying to jump on the MMA bandwagon these days, and I'll bet you a few years ago they probably would have said no to something like this, but, you know, let's face it, Bellator didn't have a home, and they probably gave it away for a little song and dance from MTV, so to me, it's a good move because, like they said, they want to be your go-to spot every Saturday night where you can go and watch fights. And I think they said that the plan is to put them in the time slot they're in, I think, is before a lot of the other events happen. So mm-hmm. I think it's almost like a lead-in. You know, you have people over, you're going to watch, you know, a UFC pay-per-view or a Strikeforce show on Showtime, and you can tune in to watch some Bellator before it. So, you know, to me, I didn't watch a lot of Bellator fights the last couple seasons because finding them and the time of day that they were on was right. Pretty much impossible. So, I have a feeling that they'll get a lot more eyes on their broadcast now that it's on MTV and it's a little bit more accessible. And, you know, they're coming up with some decent fighters that they've signed. So I think that, you know, the tournament format, everybody loves a tournament, but people I don't think realized a lot of the people that were in the tournaments were decent fighters until, you know, guys like Pat Curran, you know, made their way to the top of the heap. So I think that they're almost, people look at them almost as a breeding ground for talent, you know, that go on to bigger and better things. But I think they want to establish themselves as being more than that.
Yeah, well, there are a few recognizable names in this season's welterweight tournament. You've got the former champ, Lyman Good. You've got last year finalist, Dan Hornbuckle. Plus, you've got a UFC vet in Jay Haran. Is this, do those names mean anything to you? Like, does having those guys involved put this tournament more on your radar? Or is it just sort of like, you know, Bellator is Bellator no matter who's over there?
Yeah, you know what? I was surprised that Haran went where he went, but... You know, knowing a little bit, I've heard from different people about the way that the discussions went and about how, you know, he was in discussions with the UFC and they were going to offer him so much less money and he kind of pissed them off with, they found out he was negotiating with Bellator. So I don't know. He's a guy that could do well in the tournament and maybe, you know, I hate to say move on to the UFC because I think that's the way that most people see Bellator. And I guess until they prove themselves as being a viable contender, which they may never do, or they may prove themselves with some of these tournaments and some of the guys that are emerging as the winners of the tournaments. But to me, I want to watch it because I want to see how these guys do. And, you know, they got guys like even they signed Rob McCullough and, you know, Rico mm-hmm. Rodriguez is talking about coming back. To me, as a fan and a longtime fan, even though Rico's obviously not the fighter he used to be, he's a guy I want to see. And, you know, I want to see... I'm kind of a fan of you know, a good story. So to see a guy like Razor Rob McCullough maybe make a comeback and kind of get back on track, I want to see that because, you know, you see these guys struggle and you see when they're on top, and it kind of sucks when you see their careers start to dwindle before they make their way out of the sport. So I don't know. Hopefully they can market these tournaments better and maybe market the show a little bit better because – I didn't even know that the fight was on except for, you know, I think somebody mentioned it in passing this week. It might have been you sent an email around saying, should we cover Bellator? So, you know, if we don't know about it, chances are the casual fans don't know about it unless they're going to stumble upon it Saturday night.
Right. Yeah. No, I was a little bit surprised to find out that Bellator was this Saturday, that they're making their MTV2 debut this Saturday. And you wonder, or at least I wonder, if they'll be able to get some traction, you know, in the MMA community or even the mainstream community
yeah.
by through being on MTV2, or if this will just be another one of the kind of the gimmick shows that MTV has tried over the past. They've done like pro wrestling. They've done a number of different things on MTV too. So it'll be interesting to see not only if Bellator is able to get some traction out of this, but also if MTV too is kind of along for the long haul, or if they're just going to do this on the short term. And if it doesn't immediately become a hit, maybe dump it and move on to something else. But it is an interesting opportunity for Bellator. So we'll see where it goes, I suppose.
Yep.
Let's move on here to some news and notes before we finally sign off today or get into our interview with Marluce. As of Thursday, Chael Sonnen's suspension in California is officially up. Mike, are we just now waiting for Sonnen to sort of clear the final hurdle of his federal sentencing at the end of the month, and then he'll get back to the UFC right away? Or do you think that maybe the Dana White and the folks from the Octagon are going to play this a little bit slower in terms of like trying to get him back in action?
Well, I think, you know, it's a big PR move by the UFC to kind of distance themselves from the whole situation. And yeah, I think they're waiting to see what exactly happens on the 28th. It's all fine and good to say, yeah, he's just going to get this small fine and lose his realtor's license. But at any time, they could decide differently. You know, more facts could come out. They could find out, you know, that he was more involved than he admitted that he was. So to me, I think March 28th and probably, I'd say probably a few days after March 28th, we'll find out what he's doing next and who he's fighting. I think it's going to be either Vanderlei or Bisping, depending on when they're going to wait around to see who they fight next. But to me, yeah, I have a feeling that, you know, it doesn't matter that the suspension's over. We're just going to have to wait and see because, you know, let's be honest. It'd make Dana look pretty stupid if he said, yeah, we're promoting this fight. This is when it's going to happen. Then you find out, you know, that Chael's got to go away to jail or he's not allowed to leave the state or, you know, it was a federal charge of money laundering. So that could be another issue anyway. Even if he does get the fine and lose his license, he could still be prevented from leaving the state. He could have a parole officer, whatever it is. And I don't know how they deal with cases like this if you have to check in. But, you know, there could be a lot riding on what he gets and what the sentencing is like.
Right. And another thing is that even though his suspension is over in California, he's still going to have to apply for a license in any other state where he goes to fight. And it remains to be seen, you know, if his testosterone replacement therapy will be an issue in front of any of these other state athletic commissions, especially in Las Vegas, where he kind of got into a slight pissing match with Keith Kaiser during the whole thing during California, when Sonnen alleged that he had a conversation with Kaiser where I think Sonnen alleged that he told Kaiser he was on this therapy and Kaiser told him kind of to keep that under his hat. Which, you know, if you're Keith Kaiser, you don't want that getting spread around. So Sonnen alleges that he had this conversation with Kaiser and Kaiser said it never happened. So we'll see, you know, how kind of permissive the Las Vegas Athletic Commission or the Nevada State Athletic Commission will be if and when Sonnen has to apply for a license there.
For sure.
I think you're right in saying that he probably either fights Vanderlei or Michael Bisping when he comes back. Either of those guys kind of pique your interest more than the other one?
To me, I think I said it on the site. I don't get why a lot of people are calling out Vanderlei other than to piggyback off his name. And I don't think Sonnen needs to do that. I think, you know, beating Bisping, who a lot of people, you know, obviously when we put our rankings out this week, a lot of people either argued with the fact that he should be on the top five or argued against it. And I think that, you know, he's definitely a prospect. He's definitely close to being, I guess, a contender just by the amount of wins he's had and everything else. But to me, he hasn't decisively really beaten a lot of guys lately. And, you know, we've seen in that fight with Dan Henderson, which is funny because if you look on Wikipedia, I noticed today, they've actually said that he beat him by Falcon Punch. it was like, oh, really? Interesting. But I think that I think that, you know, he has yet to really be tested by a top guy. I'd like to see Bisping fight a guy like Sonnen or a guy like Belcher or a guy like even a guy like Okami, you know, who was in line and then kind of lost his spot in line and nobody knows who he's fighting next. He's kind of on the sidelines waiting for somebody. I think maybe, you know, Bisping should fight a guy like him or, you know, a contender. Even, you know, Belfort, I think, would be a good fight for him as well. And he's called him out too, wanting to fight him because of the whole spitting incident, because, you know, he always talks about honor and being, you know, of good character. So there's a lot of storylines that could come out in the next few weeks, but I think, you know, Sonnen to fight Vanderlei at this point in his career would probably be a step backwards for him. I don't know why he wants to, other than, you know, the whole Vanderlei starting the beef with him and making him look like he was, you know, kowtowing to him a little bit in the van on that video we saw where he told him he needs to respect Brazil and show more respect towards Anderson. You know, I think he took issue and umbrage with that. You know, he was probably just keeping the peace because it was in front of the UFC's head of PR. So I don't know. To me, I'd probably enjoy seeing the fight, but I don't think he'd do any better than Anderson, you know, did in the first 4.5 rounds of the fight, Vanderlei, that is, against Sonnen. So to me, I think that it makes more sense for him to fight a guy that's a viable contender.
Yeah. In other news, I guess Strikeforce, this kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit. Strikeforce has apparently officially rescheduled the second leg of its heavyweight Grand Prix quarterfinals, pushed it back to June 18th. I say officially because I got a press release about it earlier this week, and apparently that's about as official as anything gets from Strikeforce, especially regarding this tournament. Meanwhile, you've got Alistair Overeem saying that he'll wait until the tournament is over and he won't fight anywhere else, but Bigfoot Silva's people say they do want to keep him active outside the tournament. Mike, what the hell is going on, and is this tournament already falling apart?
Man, it's been falling apart since they announced it, I think, and it's just been getting progressively worse. I think, you know, obviously Fedor losing just threw a wrench in everybody's plans, but yeah, the whole rescheduling thing is crazy, and they're talking about now, too. I just read a story today saying that they're going to be doing their own drug testing for the next couple cards because there's no independent drug testing leading up, and I don't know if that's because they're protecting their investment with a guy like Josh Barnett, or because, you know, people are arguing that that's what they're doing, is they're trying to skirt, you know, the drug testing. Because they talked about how they were supposed to go to Japan for the April show, and then they were talking about, you know, maybe going back to California, which obviously has the most stringent drug testing. And then that's why a lot of people are saying now that they couldn't go with Barnett on the card. But I don't know, man. It just seems, it's very odd to me, all these changes that keep creeping up. You know, you talk about, like, how they, the story we put up on the site the other day about how Chad Griggs told me that, Or sorry, someone close to Chad Griggs. let me rephrase that. I don't think I was supposed to tell that it was him that told me. Anyway, we had the story that I put up the other day that somebody close to the situation informed me that Chad Griggs was offered, I think it was the night of his win at the Strikeforce event, a fight with either Valentin Overeem or Daniel Cormier. And at first, you know, he had a hematoma on his ear, and I heard that he declined it because he didn't have enough time to prepare because he's a full-time paramedic and firefighter. But, you know, 2 days later, it didn't matter anyway because he got a medical suspension for 30 days, and that would have only left him with 3 weeks. So it just seems that it almost seems like they're trying to knock out all of the guys that are supposed to be the alternates for the show because, you know, they're looking at getting Fedor back in somehow. I don't know. I may be wrong. I may be just reading into it. But all these little things about how, you know, they've said that they're going to have this mystery panel that's going to vote people back in and everything else. It's just, I think they already have in mind who they want to fight whom. And if it falls apart for some reason, they're going to try to make it happen no matter what.
Right. Well, it seems strange at this point, since if you don't even get the opening round done until mid to late June, yep, then I think you're really pushing to get the semifinals, you know, online by September.
Yeah.
And that assumes that you're going to have your semifinal fights on the same card.
Yep.
And even then, boy, then I think you're really under fire to try to even get this thing done before next year.
Yeah, I guess December was the date I heard. And like you said, September for the semis, or maybe even August if they can push it and everybody comes out injury free from the semi or from the other first round bouts. But yeah, December, man, that's a long time for a guy like Overeem not to fight, you know, to fight 3 times in 1 year when he fought like 7 times last year. That's a, you know, hopefully they're paying these guys very well because even the alternates, they've got to stay healthy in case they're going to fight. So they can't take fights elsewhere either. So it's interesting to me that this is taking a full year for this tournament that could have, you know, been over in like 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I think maybe we understand why a guy like Shane Del Rosario would say that he's totally cool with not actually being in the tournament because he actually wants to fight this year.
Yeah.
So
we are back with the Strikeforce Women's Welterweight Champion, Marluce Kunin, who is taking on Liz Carmouche this weekend at Strikeforce Vigeau versus Henderson. First off, Marluce, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling very well. I flew at Sunday and getting used to the time difference. My weight is okay and looking forward to Saturday.
I heard from Boss that there's going to be a new gym open up in California probably this year, Glory Gym. I guess that'll make a big difference for you to be able to maybe do the last leg of your training camp on U.S. soil so you don't have to fly maybe before the week of the fight.
Yeah, exactly. That would make a big difference, I think. And maybe I can stay a little bit longer here in the States as well, and train here. Well, stay here all the time. We're looking. My trainer Martin and I are looking into that.
Excellent. Now you've got your fight coming up this week. Obviously, you know the opponent changed. You're supposed to fight Misha Tate, and your opponent has changed kind of last minute due to injury. Did you have to prepare differently for this fight, or are you more so a person that prepares your own style of fighting for how you're going to fight rather than mostly for your opponent?
No, we do look at the opponent, but I believe that MMA is a sport, so it sounds maybe a little bit simple, but it's always the same, and you tweak it a little bit to the opponent you're fighting. And then we also have got a game plan, of course. So I believe Lisa stand-up is a little bit better than Misha's, but she's a good wrestler too. And she's won very impressively her five fights. And, I'm feeling good, and it will be a fierce fight. I'm pretty sure about that.
For sure. I saw a video of the hero's welcome you got when you won the title. How differently have you been treated, I guess? Back home, has it been much different, or have you noticed more of a difference here when you come to the U.S. and to North America?
Well, in the Netherlands, MMA isn't that big, so the media do not pay that much attention to it, but I got a little bit more media attention. But to be honest, my focus is on the U.S., so what's happening in the Netherlands, I like it, and I just received an award when the day before I flew to the U.S. But, the attention and the recognition is there in the martial arts scene, and I'm really happy with that. But my focus is on the U.S., and the people. It's for me important that the people get to know me here and see me not only as a fighter, but also get to know me as Martin, as a person.
I think people don't understand that you've been training. You've been at this a long time. You started with Martin when you were, I guess, 14 years old, and you've been training now for 15 years. So it's not like you're an MMA newcomer or even a newcomer to training in the sport.
No. I think people are aware of females fighting in MMA when Gina became so popular. And in the beginning, I heard a lot of girls gossiping about Gina, talking negative about her. But I'm really grateful to her because she's the one who made it big. And I was in the game for a long time. And thanks to her, I'm now fighting in the U.S. If she wasn't there, I do not believe that I will be here right now also.
And I think that's part of it, too. You talk about, women's MMA is kind of, it's gaining more acceptance with people like yourself. You know, Sarah Kaufman helped with it. Obviously, Cyborg and even Gina. Do you think that, by the end of this year, is that part of your goal is to elevate it even more, where it's gaining more acceptance and more, I guess, popularity than it did last year?
Yeah, what I can do, I do about it. So I don't know. I do my best, and I hope that's enough. But I think we women, we really have to unite and keep coming up with really good fights, and being also like females outside of the when we're in the cage.
Yeah.
I don't look too good, but I believe it's very important to be feminine outside of the cage, and we saw that in Gina, and because. The true fans do not mind, in my opinion, if you're a man or a woman who's fighting, But for the casual fan, it's more like the appearance and the entertainment and everything around it is very important. And if you want to get that target group, then we really have to play the game. And I do it in my own way. I think it's very important to always stay respectful and everything like that. But I hope I can help.
And I think, you talk about your image and trying to do things respectfully. I think that was probably why you were so upset after the fight with Sarah, where, Sarah thought that maybe you held on to the submission too long, and you were, explained vehemently that you didn't, because, that's not in you. And Golden Glory is known for sportsmanship and known for, I guess, honor as well. Was that, something that really bothered you after the fight, that it was kind of tough to deal with being accused of something like that?
No, because I knew I didn't do anything wrong. But it was when I was in a cage, I thought the audience were booing at me, and that the audience didn't understand that I was just playing the game fairly. And then later on, I talked to a few people, and they say, no, they weren't booing at you. They were booing, or some people said at the referee, and other people said they were booing at Sarah for complaining. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I believe I want to, when I win, I want to win. I don't want to go to the scorecards. I want to win on a knockout or a tap out, you know?
Yep.
And nothing else. I don't want to win with full play, because in my opinion, if you have to play full, you're, then you're the weaker fighter in that cage. And if you're the best, then you win in a convincing way.
Yeah, for sure. Now, looking, I guess, at the rest of this year, you know, obviously this is your first, you know, what you're focused on is winning this fight. You know, there's obviously people still want to see you fight Misha Tate. Do you see...
Oh, I want to fight her too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, you got some unfinished business, and obviously yep. She has earned the right to fight you.
When I heard she was injured, I really felt bad for her. But then I also heard that she's already training again, and next week she will be recovered. It sounds a little bit weird to me, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, what? You know? But it's good to create a little bit beef from her side, because the fight will come, and it will be a really hard fight.
Yeah, yeah.
For her.
So, yeah, you never know. Maybe she wasn't prepared. Maybe there was some other issues. But, yeah, I think I heard that too, and it was kind of questionable that, you know, how injured could you be that you're back in the gym? But I guess we'll never know.
I fought often when I was really sick, and yep. I'd still step into the ring or the cage. You know, when you're a fighter, there are always injuries, and there are always stuff, and there are enough excuses not to step into the cage. But if you really want it, then you will be in that cage. And sometimes you make mistakes with it that because you're too sick or too injured. But as a professional fighter, you do have to deal with that.
For sure.
And suck it up.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you look at your career, and you've always been one that's taken fights. You know, you look at that fight with Christian Santos where, you know, you're probably fighting above the your natural weight and fighting a little bit, you know, just you took the fight on short notice. Do you look at some of the losses that you have, you know, and I'm not even speaking about the one with Cyborg, but do you look at them as things that you want to avenge, or have you moved on from some of your past losses?
Yeah, I did it with Roxanne, because the first time I lost, in my opinion, I didn't lose. I was sick to fight in that fight, but I didn't tell that at the time because it would sound like an excuse, but I can now because I won from her the second time. But the judges were Japanese. They were from her gym and stuff like that. Referee was from her gym, but the stuff you hear later on. And but from Cyborg, that was really a loss. She really beat me, and it was one of the best fights I ever had. And I respect her a lot.
Yep.
And but I learned so much of that fight, and I really want to fight her again. I want to fight a few times on 135, and then maybe another fight at 145 to get used to the weight. And then I really want to meet her again in the cage.
So 145 could be against Gina is something, you know, that people have talked about.
Oh, yeah,
too.
I want to fight Gina as well. Oh, yeah, they do? Well, I'm up for it.
Excellent. So I guess if Gina hasn't heard it, then, you know, maybe this will be your opportunity to say, if she's up for it, you're up for it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Now,
anytime, anywhere.
In the parking lot, even. No. So you talked about, you know, representing and putting a female face as well on the sport. Martin told me before we got on the air here that you're in Nordstrom's right now picking up some shoes for the press conference.
Yeah, because I didn't have time to do it in Amsterdam, and yep. I was like, oh, I'll do it in the States. So, but I'm looking for some shoes, but it's hard to find a good one.
Ones to go with the gold. Ones that'll go with the gold.
Yeah, they have to match my belt.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll show up in sneakers if I cannot find anything.
Yeah. Now, you know, I guess talking about Team Golden Glory, you know, I've done some done some interviews with Boss. You know, I've talked to Martin, and I know, you know, the history that not a lot of people know. But looking at the team itself, you're more of a family, I think. And Boss talks about this a lot, that you guys all, you know, come and support each other. You train together, you sweat together, you bleed together. How important is it to have a team behind you that, you know, isn't just out for, you know, one person has a fight, so they're not all in the gym. You guys are all there to support each other. How important has that been to your success?
Well, like you said before, I know Martijn since the age of 14, so I know him for 15, no, even longer.
Yeah.
I know him for quite a long, 15 years. And we've been together to Japan, and if you have a bond with a person like that, if you have a person who steps with you in cage or always cage side, that creates such a bond, and that's something you also take with you in daily life. And he's like family to me. It really feels like family. And there in the gym, people come and people go, but then we've got like the hardcore base of Golden Glory. Those people know, I know like Alistair for at least like 12 years, I guess.
Yeah.
And I do not see him that often, but like he was there, I don't know, my last training in, we've got different gyms of Golden Glory in the Netherlands. So my last training in Amersfoort, he was there too. And then he's giving advice and he's telling stuff. And it's very in a friendly way. And I believe it creates a synergy in the team if everybody backs each other up.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess you can look at it. You're like the little sister to a lot of these guys, and you probably take it personally. You know, when you read or hear, I don't know if you follow internet, you know, people that bash certain fighters and stuff. Do you ever take that to heart when people talk about your teammates?
To be honest, I don't.
Yeah.
Because I know how good they are.
Yeah.
And I know how hard they work for it. And what I always find is that the people who talk very loud on the internet and very negative mostly, they are very frustrated people. And I don't want to have anything to do with that. So it says, if somebody's really negative, like Gurka Saki, I'm such a big fan of him. If somebody would talk negative about him, it would say more about the person than it would say anything about Saki. Yeah. And I feel it for Alistair the same, because people do not realize how hard Alistair has been training all these years and what he has sacrificed. And the same goes for Nicky Holtzgen or for Dion Staring or Sam Schild or, you know, Sir Baduzada. And a peer colleague, you know, an MMA fighter would say something about one of my teammates, it will hit me harder, you know, yeah. Like he's not good. I was like, what? He's not good. But no, anonymous people on the internet, I don't care about.
No, because a lot of them, that's what their deal is they try to start stuff with people just to get a rise so they can say, you know, Marloes responded to something I said, or so-and-so responded. So it's probably, you know, nine-tenths of the people on the internet aren't who they say they are anyway.
Yeah. Keyboard warriors.
yeah, for sure. Now, if you look at Strikeforce, it's become, I guess, the home of a lot of Golden Glory fighters. You know, you've got a ton of people that are fighting there. You know, you've got belts in at least two divisions already. Is that, you know, where you plan to fight for you know, the foreseeable future?
Well, first of all, the people of Strikeforce that are really genuine, nice people. I feel they really welcome you. But second is, if you're a female fighter, there's only one organization you want to fight for, and it's Strikeforce.
Yeah.
At the moment, they're the leading organization worldwide, and so it's quite simple.
Yeah.
If you're not with Strikeforce, you're nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. That should be a commercial. If you tell Scott maybe to put out a commercial about female MMA. If you're not with Strikeforce, you're nowhere. You could be the spokesperson.
Pay off.
Yeah, a little bit of cash in your pocket.
Well, we'll tell him.
We'll suggest it. You know, you talked about being in Japan. You've talked about, you know, the different places that you fought. Is there a place that, you know, you'd like to fight in the future? I've heard rumors. I'm from Canada, just outside of Toronto, and I've heard that Strikeforce is looking at coming here sometime this year.
Oh, I would really love to go to Canada.
And we have a very big following here because there's a very large Dutch population here.
Yeah, I heard about it. Martijn told me about it because I should fight one time. I don't know. I was fighting Cyborg in Canada, and I was like, oh, would people would like to see me? He said, well, there are a lot of Dutch people living in Canada, so don't worry about it at all, Marloes.
Yeah, for sure. Now, do you have goals like that where there's different places you'd want to fight, or do you just, you know, fight wherever
I've got one goal. I want to stay the champion.
Yep.
That's my first and foremost goal. And if it's possible, I would like, as a reigning champion in 135, also fight in 145. But that's up to Scott. He's the boss, and he decides.
Try to unify the belts. Is that the goal?
I will not speak it out loud, but there's a reason I want to fight Cyborg again.
Yeah, knock on wood, knock on wood. It's like, you know, Alistair's probably told you how great it feels having more than one belt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a good example.
Excellent, excellent. Now, the one question, and I'm going to let you go here because I know you're busy soon. One question I always ask people, and it's kind of a thinker, but, you know, I get a variety of answers. What's one thing about yourself that people would be surprised to know or not a lot of people know?
Ooh, I'm a foodie.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. I'm a big foodie. But the people in Strike Force and everybody, they quite know about it because when I have to make weight, they will only hear me talking about food.
Now, are you like to cook or you like to eat it?
No, I read a lot about cooking, but I love to eat it as well. But I'm really a foodie. Yeah. I read a lot about it. I like. At the moment, I'm really into Korean food, so yeah. Every chance I have, I try to cook Korean. I go to the Korean restaurant, but I really love it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I think that's all we have for you, Marloes. I appreciate it. I look forward to the fight this weekend, and I'm really looking forward to see what the future has this year and beyond.
Yeah, me too. And thank you.
We'll give you the chance now if you want to thank anybody, any sponsors, any coaches.
Well, of course, my Golden Glory team and Scott Cocker and the people of Showtime and all the people who are supporting me. I hope they come out on Saturday or watch television or just to support me and trying to stay champ.
Well, we look forward to seeing it. And you're a great ambassador to not only women's MMA, but MMA in general. We'll talk to you again sometime, hopefully in the future, and good luck.
Okay, thank you.